On April 26th, Boy Kills World. The must-see action movie event of the year hits theaters.
Yes! The Vandercoys killed my family. Now, I'm gonna kill them one by one.
Critics are calling it Looney Tunes on acid.
You know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder?
Weapons. Danger. Let's do this.
Bill Skarsgård in Boy Kills World. Only in theaters April 26th. Rated R.
Lots of things are better together. Hockey, food, golf, or a nice cold one on a warm spring day hanging out on the deck. But if you really want to take things to the next level, drink some Labatt Blue Lights with your friends and live life to the power of we. Always enjoy responsibly. Beer, Labatt USA, Buffalo, New York.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
The GM Shuffle is back once again. I'm back home in North Jersey. My man Lombardi, though, is a man of a thousand tricks. He's currently navigating things because he's doing some work with Vissen, and he's also in Southport Hotel. Where are you exactly in Vegas?
I'm at the South Point Casino, and it's an amazing place. I mean, first of all, it's got the number one restaurant in Las Vegas, a place called Michael's. Unbelievable dining experience.
Good name.
But you also get an equestrian center. You also get a bowling alley, and you get a lot of oxygen tanks and people. Like, I do the show, it starts at 4 a.m. out here. So I walk down to the show, and there's people with oxygen tanks in scooters smoking, hitting those machines. If I get to that point, I promise you, you have all my permission to shoot me. Seriously, if I get to that point.
Like, at that point, like, Lombardi, you're tapping out. It's enough. It's funny. I know ex-smokers just say, you know, they just always love the smell of smoke. They go to Vegas, and even it's too much for them. They go, you know what? I can't take it. I'm going to pass out in these casinos.
I can't, but I love doing VEASAN. I love it. It's a gambling aspect. You can talk about, like, we can talk about it. Yeah. You can get involved, and it's good, and the conversations are good, and the people that you're talking to obviously are better, so they've got a vested interest in this thing, and they want to make sure they know what the hell's going on. So it's really good, and there's some really great people. This casino, small world. The guy I recruited to go to UNLV back in 1981, the guy named Steve Stallworth, he runs this casino. So the world's come full circle. I'm back in the buffet line like I was at UNLV trying to get buffet tickets. It's great.
Anytime you get a free buffet, that's a good thing. And speaking of buffets, there's nothing the NFL would like more for its ravenous appetite than more games. And maybe that's exactly what America needs. We all love football, so there's more football, better. You've been hearing there's rumors for a while as far as the NFL trying to add games, and players have fought back saying, hang on a second, with concussions and CTE, you want us to hurt ourselves and there's still non-guaranteed contracts? Why the hell would we do that? So how about this idea, potentially floated out, 18-game schedule, but a 16-game limit for each player. So that would mean that Tom Brady can't play 18. A backup quarterback's got to play at least two. And when's the last time you saw a starting quarterback play all 16? No matter what, you're going to have a backup quarterback playing at least a handful of games, not to mention depth from all those positions, your defensive line, your offensive line, etc. Your first thought when I hear 18-game schedule, I say, Mike, that's a ton of money. The NFL could make $2.5 billion from this. What do you think?
Well, yeah, the NFL makes it, and so do the players. So, you know, the players have to think that their salaries would go up, the cap would go up, you know, based on those two more games. But I can't imagine that this would pass. Why would the quarterback not play all 18? Like, really, why? We've made the rules so you can't even touch the quarterback. Now we're going to rest him for two games? And I get at the end of the year, I would think it would happen at the beginning of the year or the end of the year, where if you got something clinched, it doesn't matter. But we want those games in week 16 and 17 to matter. Can you imagine if you've got to rest a quarterback at that point? And how do you rest somebody? Say you're Atlanta and you're playing the AFC East. Do you rest them against New England because you don't think you can win? Like, how does that work? I mean, you talk about looking into coaches' crystal balls when they can't handle first and 10. How are they going to handle this situation? I don't know. I mean, I like the idea of cutting two preseason games. I really do.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like the idea of quarterbacks not playing. If they want to play 18 games, then tell the quarterbacks they got to play 18. They're getting the most money anyway.
Yeah, exactly. The whole sport is built upon what? With the star power. Why would you limit the star power? If you're a fan, you're saying, I'm paying hundreds of dollars here to see Matt Ryan with the Falcons, not the backup. In essence, you're giving the fan more what they want, which is more football, but you're not doing it the way they want. And people can smell a rat, right? If you're giving me the best cheesecake, if you're giving me Michael's in Vegas, I'm in. But if it's an imposter and you're saying it's Michael's prices, well, I'm not in for that.
No. And look, let me tell you something. If you ever come to Vegas, you got to go to Michael's. Used to be in the Barbary Coast, and they moved it here when they closed the Barbary Coast. It's one of the best restaurants, so that you would sniff right through that. I mean, you would sniff right through that. There's no doubt. I just don't see this as practical, you know. And of course, my man Mark Murphy, you know, he's all of a sudden he's involved in everything from the Packers. It's amazing. Like, I think there's a way to play 18, but I don't think it's this way.
All right, we'll see if they can figure it out, because you're right. Everybody can unanimously agree preseason stinks and more regular season would be nice. And as long as everyone's getting a piece of the pie, players and owners, maybe there's a way to make it coexist. Next topic of conversation is Ezekiel Elliott, and this could be awfully concerning for the Dallas Cowboys, as there's rumors that he could be a training camp holdout. In fact, could be a triumvirate of Cowboys here who are not happy, including their three biggest offensive players. That would be quarterback Dak Prescott, Elliott, their running back, and Amari Cooper, the wide receiver. How concerning is this for the Cowboys, making sure Zeke is happy?
Well, look, let's start off with Bill Parcells' famous line about Jerry Jones. He could talk the cat off the top of a fish truck. So if you know that about Jerry, then he could talk these guys into coming to camp. All right, that's A. B, look, if Zeke wants to hold out a training camp, he'd be doing the Cowboys a favor, because then I don't have to worry about how do I separate him from the team. I don't want to. He's not going to play in any preseason games anyway, right? Mm-hmm. So what do I need him to? What do I need him out there for? Like, seriously, why would he play? Why is he coming to camp? I want him to get in condition, but he could do that off to the side. That's what he's going to do. He's not going to take a lot of contact. That's B. C, they're going to have to do something where they figure out their cap and how they break down the pie. To me, I would go to Dak. I would sit there and say, if I'm Jerry Jones, I've got Amari Cooper, I got Zeke Elliott, I got Dak Prescott. I would work hard on getting Dak Prescott done first, because I need to give Dak to give me a deal. Look, Dak, you're going to have three more contracts. You're going to have this contract and two more. This isn't the one you're hitting the home run in. Mm-hmm. This isn't the one you're going to hit the home run in. This is you're going to hit a nice double, right? And I'll give you all the incentives that you could be a home run. But this is a nice double. I'll do it for 3 years. Right. As we build this team around you for 3 years, then you come in, and then 3 years from now, Zeke's probably gone. You know, where are we? I've rebuilt the team. I've got a lot of younger players on this team. Now I'll pay you like a top five player. I think that's the conversation. Everybody gets concerned with negotiations when they think it's just about money. Negotiations is about positions, you know, and you got to have a little Henry Kissinger here, and you got to be able to handle it, and you got to be able to say, hey, look, here's the way this best serves the team, and put it back. If Dak wants to be the highest paid quarterback, then you just got to say, Dak, that ain't going to happen, because I'll make you the highest paid quarterback. You have no team around you. How long is that going to last?
Right. And out of those three players, who do you think is the most vital to the Cowboys' success? Dak, Zeke, or Amari Cooper?
Well, long-term, it's Dak, right? Long-term, it's Dak. I mean, look, the Cowboys have to give Dak a chance to be a better player. The Cowboys were horrendous last year in the red zone on third down. They don't run Zach enough down there and Dak enough in the red zone. I mean, this is a big man who could run with the football. They're one of the worst red zone teams in football, besides one of the worst third down teams and third quarter teams. The Cowboys were outscored in the third quarter minus 22. I mean, that's coaching. That's everything about coaching. And then when you look at the Cowboys and you see where they are in terms of what they do on third down in the red zone, they're bad. And why is that? Because they can't utilize the running skills of Dak to separate and spread the defense out. I mean, it's pretty clear. The key stat about the Cowboys that I find fascinating for any better listening to this podcast is the Cowboys are undefeated when their defense plays less than 30 minutes. Undefeated. So what does that tell you? That tells you if the Cowboys offense can hold the ball 32 minutes, the Cowboys will be one of the best teams in the league. However, that being said, we know the clapper's going to screw it up, and that won't be the case.
I just hope you don't turn into mush. I mean, I know you're a smart guy, so as far as gambling, you're not going to be mush. We're going to have to find a mush out there in the world who's going
to
be like the
bad. We need to have a mush come on the pod at once a week, like somebody right. That we could talk to about it. I definitely want to do that. Yeah. I think we should have a musher, you know, somebody that we just – I mean, I think Frances is too busy, but I'm sure we could have somebody.
It'd be like Frances. You're right about that. Also, the NFL finalizing the pass interference replay for the 2019 season. There was no bigger thorn in the side of Roger Goodell than pass interference. New Orleans Saints fans are still pissed about it. What do you think of the latest vernacular around this disputed rule?
Well, I think from talking to people in the league that talked to the officials that came in, what we saw was the officials basically told the clubs, look, we're going to call pass interference the way we've always done it, okay? If it goes to replay, it goes to replay. However, we are not going to call the jump balls like it was pass interference. Jump balls are going to stay the same. At the end of the game, when everybody's in the end zone and the ball's up in the air, that's going to stay exactly the same. We're not going to call it any differently. That's going to be officiated. It's a ball in play. Everybody's got a right to the ball. There's no pass interference. So with that taken out, which I thought they were going to call pass interference down there, because, look, we could go to replay on that call every single time, and you could say there's pass interference, right? Like, I was thinking if we had the ball at the 40 and it's first and 10 at the opponent's 40, wouldn't you take a shot in the end zone and play jump ball and figure you're going to get a pass interference? 9 times out of 10, you're going to get one, right? Well, right. The league's smart enough to say, we're eliminating that. They're just going to call it in terms of at the field, not necessarily in the end zone. Those calls are at the end of the game, end of the half. Those calls are going to be the way they've always been.
Is pass interference at all to liken it to traveling in basketball, the way people say in today's game, you could call a travel on every play, and similarly in football, you could call pass interference in every play if you really wanted to?
Yeah, the guys that hold and pull and tug, you know who they are, and you can find out what they're doing. I mean, and they get away with it. I mean, they get away with it, and they're good at being able to grab the inside arm or keep the arm down. I mean, there's so much hand contact. I think we've got to be able to say, look, it isn't just pristine out there. The guys are going to be bumping around. It's like fouls in basketball. You could call a foul in basketball every single time, right? Mm-hmm. But there's going to be some contact. It's got to be contact that disrupts, not contact that is normal.
Yeah, I think that's maybe the clearest way to go. Speaking of making contact after football, how about making some contact with some moolah? Richard Seymour and the World Series of Poker. You know, I think some of these athletes today, Mike, especially I know with baseball, with changeup on the zone, these guys love their video games, right? Everyone's playing Fortnite. I like the fact that this guy's into old school, right? Seymour likes poker. I mean, that is Vegas. That's old school way to win some money. Did you have any idea Richard Seymour would be this good at the World Series of Poker?
I didn't. I mean, look, you know, he always was tough to do a contract with. So that's the first start of poker, right?
Yeah.
You know, you got to figure out how to play your hand and how to show your hand. I mean, it's fascinating that he's able to do that. I mean, the poker players are remarkable. The thing at Safe Poker, let's be real honest, is the poker cam, right?
Yeah.
Being able to see underneath the cards has made poker a live event. I mean, before that, you really wouldn't. You know, I'm friends with Andy Duke. She wrote a book, Thinking in Bets, and she's writing another one right now. The Thinking in Bets was a great book, but she started her book off talking about the Seattle play and why it was the right thing for Seattle to do, as I talked about mine. Mm-hmm. And so she talks to me about poker and how much you've got to be able to think in terms of abstract and think of percentages of who has the cards and where's it's coming from. It really requires thought and concentration. It isn't just, oh, luck. I mean, you got to really understand the deck and how it's all going to come out. I think for Richard Seymour, it's kind of pretty impressive he's done that. For a defensive lineman, no disrespect to D lineman, but I would have seen this more quarterback, offensive line, you know, I could see that. D-line, this caught me by surprise.
I remember, I think it was in, I can't remember which movie now, it might have been Friday Night Lights or one of those movies, football movies, they talk about the D-line and they go, like, how much intelligence does that take? All you do is you literally run after a quarterback the entire game. Like, literally just go in a straight line, maneuver to your right, left, and sack a guy. Like, that does not take deep intelligence. To your point, the most cerebral guys you think are quarterbacks, old linemen, they can study the playbook, etc. So Seymour, he's changing the image of D-linemen.
Yeah, I mean, D-lineman, to me, if anybody watches an NFL game from the field and watches the intensity that the D-line has to play with, you get great respect for them. But the one thing is, it does require some instinct. We had a kid named John Thornton from the University of Cincinnati who was the all-time card player. By card player, I mean you showed him a card, where to go, and nobody could block him. But when you put him in a game and he had to figure out where to go, everybody blocked him. And so it just takes some kind of instincts. And you learn card players. There's some guys that are card players. Like, some guys are just really good looking at a card because they can't think and play at the same time. And so, okay, I'm a wide receiver. I look at the card. I go 15 and out. But when I play with Tom Brady, I got to read the corners, how the corner's playing me, what his position is, his leverage point. Now I can't think. I'm out. Done.
One guy who has not played his cards right is Tyreek Hill, now coming out and denying child abuse and domestic violence. Exact quote saying, I didn't do nothing. You've obviously been very passionate about this, as we've discussed in the GM Shuffle. What do you make of Hill's claims?
Well, I mean, it's easy to say it now. If he didn't do anything, why is he thrown out of Oklahoma State? I mean, was it that just – and then why wasn't he allowed to get into Akron? And why did he have to go to West Alabama? If he was innocent then, and if this woman did this, lied about this, why is he still with her? Like, if this woman affected his career this much, like, to me, like, I'm not taking anything he says as truth, because the evidence against him, I mean, he got thrown out of Oklahoma State. That's a fairly significant thing to do. And then he went to Akron and couldn't get in. The charges were, they had enough to press charges. There was clearly, and as she said in this dissertation, where did the bruises come from? He didn't answer that question. You know, so look, I it's interesting. Incognito got suspended for 2 games. We're seeing guys get suspended. When is he going to rule on this? Like, what more does he need to do? Like, when is the commissioner going to rule on this? At some point, he's got to make a decision. They say, well, Hill made an appealing case. No, he didn't, because, look, there was maybe the Raiders and the Chiefs were the only 2 teams that really had him live on the board. So the NFL researched it when he came out in the draft, and everybody was convinced he did it then and got away with it.
Yeah. You know, when you want to bury news, you do it Friday at 5 p.m. kind of thing. But you're right. There's no good time to do this or to not do it. If anything, for Roger Goodell, rip the Band-Aid off now and just take care of it. Like, I, to your point, I wouldn't want to get the ruling out of the way now. Whatever criticism you're going to face or people aren't happy about it, and then let the focus be on football once training camp starts in a couple of weeks. The more it drags on, the more of a bad look it is all around.
Yeah, and especially since you're suspending Incognito, and I mean, you spend him for 2 games. He didn't even, you know, whether he makes the team or not. Mm-hmm. I mean, to me, it's fascinating that you've got time to suspend these other guys, but you don't have time to you can't get to the root of the Hill case. Yeah, I mean, you know, he got thrown out of Oklahoma State. I mean, you can go back and you can ask anybody at Oklahoma State, and there was nobody defending him at Oklahoma State. Right. Nobody was. And if he thought he was innocent then, why wasn't he on a platform then?
And now we continue to wait for answers there. Meantime, we got an answer to how much a kicker can be worth. How about Robbie Gould? Good as gold. 4 years, $19 million. Man, you know what? Nothing wrong with being a kicker, Mike. I know it's not all guaranteed, but 4 years, $19 million, good money.
Yeah, and everybody, you know, the analytical people will tell you in football that the difference between a great kicker and a bad kicker is, what, about 2 misses a year? But I think the way these games are, I mean, I think that analytics is a little too skewed, especially if you're like New England playing in bad weather or Cleveland in bad weather and you got to make a kick. You know, but Gould's playing in really good weather. I think when you're Chicago and you've got weather and wind that you're dealing with, you got to pay for the kicker. I mean, the kicker is, you know, you got to pay for it, especially when you look at some of the numbers of these teams that are just bad in the red zone. I mean, the Cowboys were so bad in the red zone on third down that, you know, if they don't have a great kicker, are they going to really make it out? So I think it's – look, the analytical people tell you the difference between good and great is little. And the Eagles got lucky. The Eagles got fortunate. They got their kicker. Caleb got hurt. And then the next thing you know, they signed this other kid, I think Elliott, and they got a better kicker. But
right.
Too and far between, that doesn't happen all the time.
And part of also, too, analytics will say – well, don't even bother with the kick. Like, when it's fourth and short, too often these guys settle for the field goal. You might as well just go for it. The percentages are in your favor. So that's part of it, too, I think. If you're a believer who says, I'm not going to pay for a kicker, you've got a coach who's more aggressive on fourth down.
Right. Like, if I were the Bears, I would just go out and sign the most reliable kicker inside of 40 yards that I could possibly find. Right. And then I would go for it all the time. I put that ball right in Mitchell Trubisky's hands and tell him to go after it, my man.
More Trubisky in just a second. But I do want to talk a little bit of NBA before we get into the Madden quarterback ratings. Major moves here, man. The Rockets, we just discussed it last week. You said, where do you think Westbrook's going to go? And I said, I don't know. I think he's a big pain in the ass. And instead, Daryl Morey and the Rockets go, yeah, we'll take him. Reunited with James Harden. So I guess those guys are good again. And the Clippers get Paul George. Of course, that was the rumored trade official. Just a ton of draft picks. Two parts of this. First off, what do you think of Westbrook? And I want to ask you about all those picks that Sam Presti has now. He's got more picks he knows what to do with.
I think if I were, first of all, answer the second question. If I were Sam Presti, I would try to get, since I've saved so much money, I would try to spend another $1 million on trying to really understand how I can improve the draft process. I mean, Presti's drafted 3 Hall of Famers, but he had them at the top pick. Right. I would spend a lot of time trying to figure out how I could best serve with those picks and where I can find a way, whether it's hiring a bunch of guys from MIT to run some analytic, whatever I could do to figure out the best way possible to maximize the pick. What's the commonality? You've got nothing but time. It's going to be the future of your franchise. Put $5 million into it to figure it out. That's A. That's B. A, I was told reliably that Paul George, when he was in Vegas and heard the news, he went over to a cigar shop, I think in Caesar's Palace or somewhere on the Strip, okay? I'm not implying anything when I say this story, but this is fact. Mm-hmm. He went to the cigar shop and asked the guy, what's the most expensive cigar he has? And the guy said, I've got a $400 cigar that's gold-plated. He said, give me a box of them. And he got it, and he went and smoked them with all his friends to celebrate because he had something to celebrate. Now, I don't know if he was celebrating because he's no longer, you know, he couldn't be celebrating because he's paying more taxes, right? Because he's going to California, right?
Mm-hmm.
It isn't like Westbrook. Westbrook made $12 million on the deal. He's paying less taxes.
Yeah.
Because he goes to Texas without the tax. So I think there's your answer. The people in the league tell me Westbrook never sets a screen for anybody on the team. The whole year, he never set a screen. How is that possible?
Yeah, I mean, if you say, well, he's a poor guard, he's the one driving the action. Okay, fine, but sure, eventually you do give up the ball. You're trying to, you know, do something to help another guy. He's going to be one of the most selfish players in basketball.
How is this going to work, AD? How is it going to work? Right. We saw Harden loves to dribble, do all his stick, and then shoot a three. And, I mean, Westbrook's going to do that. How is this going to work?
Right. Two guys that always need the ball in their hands are now on the same team. The logic, you know what Daryl Morey's going to say, is they don't have to play all the time at the same time. I had the same issue with Chris Paul and James Harden. Both those guys need the ball in their hands at the same time. I just play them off each other. I play Paul for 10 minutes and Harden for 10 minutes. I don't have to play my two superstars at the same time unless it's crunch time.
Unless it's crunch time when they have to make a play. And then when one guy makes the play and the other one doesn't, I mean, look, let's face it. I mean, Westbrook, love is competitiveness, love is conditioning, love all that. Mm-hmm. But there's something about being a good teammate. And the word around the NBA, I think there was really – I don't know. I think Presti did a hell of a job getting what he got out of this because I'm not sure there was a lot of action in this deal. Miami needed another team to get involved. They were over the cap, right?
Yeah.
So they weren't involved. And then it was just, I mean, Detroit wasn't involved. Detroit did their research and said, no Moss. And then I think that, you know, when it come down to it, this is where they ended up. So I don't know. I mean, this will be funny to watch. I think if I were Mike D'Antoni, I would worry about my job security because I've got to make this mess work. And that's going to be hard.
You're right. D'Antoni's going to make the mess work, and I'm with you on Presti. Just pay as much money as you can to figure out the draft process. You have so many picks. I mean, you got more picks, you know what to do. I saw a tweet the other day. I go, I can keep track how many picks this guy's acquired. If you can hit on half of those with very good players, then you're fine. If a third of those picks are great players, you're still going to be fine.
It's unbelievable, but what he can't do is be drunk rich. He can't just throw those picks away just for the sake of throwing them away. Like, okay, you got 16 of them. Okay, I'll use one of them to move up. I think you got to value them so much that you can't let anybody come near them. And you can't just, you know, when you got a lot of money, instead of tipping a dollar, you're tipping five.
Yeah.
You can't be tipping the five. You know what I mean? You got to keep, you got to almost be really, really conservative with what you're thinking about doing with those picks because one of those picks, two of those picks are going to really come down to matter, and you don't know which one it's going to be. And if you trade one, I think, I would spend a lot of time trying to figure out how Donovan Mitchell goes to 13. You know, Kuzma goes at 28. I mean, if you look at the Lakers, AD, if you look at the Lakers roster, what they've done since 14 in terms of drafting, Julius Randle got 3 years, $65 million. Mm-hmm. You know, we just saw, D'Angelo Russell's just got a huge payday. They've drafted a lot of guys that were good players. That doesn't even count. They signed Thomas Howard from Indiana. He just got a huge payday from Washington as a free agent. I mean, they got a bunch of guys in there. Let me see who else I had in here. Oh, they got Jordan Clarkson they drafted. You know, Larry Nance they drafted. You know, so when Josh Hart, I mean, think about it. They had some really good players picked, but they just couldn't get that. They couldn't build the team. Mm-hmm. I think that's going to be Presti's job is with all these picks is figuring out where the league is going. Is it still going to be small ball? How to get multidimensional players and be able to keep up with the trends? I think it's going to be a challenge.
Yeah, definitely going to be fun to see as the NBA offseason is always interesting.
As someone always on the go, I'm always looking for an efficient meal that's going to be healthy and fast. Because you don't want to spend time cooking and then you got to clean up all the dishes for making a home-cooked meal. Yeah, they taste really good, but it also takes a lot of time. Well, how about you get a good taste with an efficient use of time that's only going to take 2 minutes? That's where our friends at Factor really step up their game. It's eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. I mean, every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat once again in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular ones like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. And you could get even 60 add-ons every single week. So breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. It's chef-prepared. They're gourmet meals. There's no fuss, no mess. 2 minutes to go ahead and prepare them, and it's tailored to your schedule. Customize your weekly meals with flexibility to get as much or as little as you need. Pause or reschedule deliveries to suit your lifestyle. It's so good, I can't believe this is the deal that we're giving out. So head to factormeals.com/shuffle50 and use code shuffle50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code shuffle50 at factormeals.com/shuffle50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
You know, AD, the biggest problem I have is I got 75 chins and going to buy clothes is so hard. Like, I can't get anything off the rack. Nothing really fits. And then when you find somebody that understands that your body is way different than somebody else's body, and they're able to handle you with clothes and you feel comfortable. Like, look, I'm Italian, but like Italian suits ain't me, right? So that's not what I do. But I think if you can find the right men's clothes wear with custom wear, like Indochino, I think you got to take a look at it.
I am with you on the fact the Italian style Eurofit is not for me either. So I'm 100% with you. I love Italians. I don't like the Italian clothing. But you're right about Indochino. Honestly, they used to feel so much better when you're in their clothes. Most exciting way, the made-to-measure menswear company. It's your exact measurements. I mean, think about it. You go get a large and it doesn't fit right. Medium, no, it's too. It's like a schmedium. Forget it. These ones perfectly fit to your body. If you're looking to get married, tons of options for the wedding party. You get high-quality fabrics, colors to choose from. Honestly, you get your own lapel, lining, pockets, buttons, right in your own monogram. It's really, really easy, Mike. You just go to a stylist at their showroom. You got over 40 showrooms in North America, or you can shop online, do it yourself, Indochino.com. You choose your fabric, you choose your design customizations, give out your measurements. It couldn't be easier to get the clothes that fit perfectly for you.
Yep, and this week, our listeners get any premium Indochino suit for just $369 at Indochino.com when entering the GM Shuffle at checkout. That's $369 Indochino.com, and all you need to do is enter the GM Shuffle at checkout. That's a 50% off regular price for made-to-measure premium suit. You can't beat it. Plus, shipping is free. That's Indochino.com, promo code the GM Shuffle for any premium suit for just $369 and free shipping. Incredible deal, a premium made to measure suit. Once you go custom, my man, you never go back.
All right, before we get to top five defensive coaches and DCs in general, we want to do our Madden quarterback ratings, which just got released. So these are...
I love this.
I was going to say, this is a great idea by you. These are just, you know, empirical data. They got Mahomes at 97. He's number one. Brady's at 96. Rivers at 94. Luck at 92. Russell Wilson, 91. Aaron Rodgers is sixth at 90. So Aaron Rodgers, not one of the top five quarterbacks. I know it's only 1 point, but according to the Madden quarterback rankings, what jumps out to you? Because they try to make this as realistic as possible.
I think, first of all, you know, for the fans, look, I don't pick on Trubisky because I don't like the kid. I pick on Trubisky because of what I watch and what I see. I think, to me, the only way, if you want to be a better in this world, if you want to be an analyst in this world, you have to take bias out of it. Like, you have to take bias out of it. And this thing takes complete bias. There's that computer, when they put when they built this algorithm together, it came with no bias. It came with no bias at all. It just said, this is based on all the empirical data. We throw it in, and here's your number. Now, you could argue with it. Look, I think Carson Wentz is a better player than Jared Goff, but Carson Wentz last year wasn't a very good player with the knee. Okay. But here's the way I look at this. If I didn't like a player and he was rated high, I should probably go back and watch him again because there's probably a chance I'm wrong. If I liked a player and he was low, then maybe I'm wrong on this. Like, to me, this validates the way I see Trubisky, because the way I see Trubisky is the same way Madden sees him. Inaccurate, makes easy throws, and they do a great job with them scheme-wise. I mean, look at this. Look at the players ahead of them. I mean, Nick Foles at 77. We talk about Nick Foles. Nick Foles has had world-class moments, not world-class games. You know, he's not career. You know what I mean? Yeah. And so when you look at it, now, if Mahomes was ranked, like, okay, we talked Christopher Sims' ranking. That was all bias-based, right? He had Brady ninth, right?
Right, subjective, his opinion, fine, whatever, yeah.
That's it. And it's his opinion, and he's entitled to it. This is a computer, so it's got some validity. That's what I like about it, and you can engage in conversation. Does this mean this is where it's going to be next year? No, but if you're Trubisky, you got to say, hey, you didn't really have a great year. That's what makes this MVP voting to me insane.
Wentz at 82, I also don't like. I mean, there's a few of those you just go, I don't get it. But to your point, I guess the data is, well, he was, in their mind, not durable, so then you get knocked down, et cetera, et cetera.
And look, the Eagles were one of the worst teams in red zone third downs last year. So when the game was on the line and he had to make a play, he didn't make them. They only converted 9 third downs in the red zone all last year. They were one of the best third down teams in the league. They couldn't convert third downs. I mean, so they were really bad down there. They were bad on third down. 2 years ago, they had 117 third and seven or more. That's a lot for a, and that they were seventh in the NFL in that category, and there were other teams like Buffalo, Cleveland, bad offenses were in there. Mm-hmm. Wentz was running. This is their Super Bowl year. Wentz was running that offense, but they were remarkable at converting third and seven at a 32% rate. That's remarkable, and so he kind of got himself out of that. I think as much as I like Wentz, I actually think that's the right number. I like Watson too. I'm actually shocked Watson is rated that high. Mm-hmm. Like to me, I think if Dak ran the ball more, I think he would be higher rated, and he doesn't. Here's one for you, Matty Ryan. Matty Ryan is – last year he was really productive in the fourth quarter, and a lot of that time is junk yards. He's trying to get junk yards, trying to get the team back. So they even give you credit for that. Like in basketball, if you get a rebound off a free throw, it's not contested, I think that should count as a half a rebound. Because it wasn't contested, right?
Right.
So
right.
if you're down 20 in the fourth quarter and you get a bunch of passing yards, that helps your stats. Are you really a good player?
That's a good point, actually.
There's got to be a way to adjust it, right? There's got to be a way to adjust it. And from me watching the tape, you could adjust it. Like I watched the tape and I could say, look, anybody could make that throw. Trubisky just made this. Anybody. It's the five or six throws that nobody can make that he hasn't been able to make.
Yeah, that's interesting. We'll see what happens with these guys because, like you said, Madden quarterback ratings, they've got their own algorithm, their own rhythm to it. Speaking of their own algorithm and rhythm, how about the top five defensive head coaches according to Mike Lombardi? So this is great because I think there's a couple obvious ones that certainly jump out. Of course, Bill Belichick is such a strong defensive mind. He's a brilliant guy and one of the greatest coaches, perhaps the greatest coach of all time. You think of Vic Fangio at Denver, of course, the former Bears head coach, Bears coordinator, now as the head coach. But you've also got some other ones here. Zimmer's a great pick. Dan Quinn is a great pick. And what I hadn't thought about, Sean McDermott with the Buffalo Bills.
Yeah. Look, Buffalo didn't play very good last year on defense. They struggled in the red zone. They struggled creating turnovers. That's typically not what they do. And I think that ultimately they've got to have a better year. Their defensive front's got to play better. Sean McDermott's a zone defensive coach who does a lot of pressures. And if he can get ahead of himself on first and 10, I think he can. To me, I think there's two category of defensive coaches here. There's the head coach defensive coordinator, which we've got Zimmer, we got Belichick, we got Vic Fangio, we got Pete Carroll, and then you got McDermott in there, Tomlin's in there, Vrabel's in there. When you look at Tennessee's numbers last year defensively, it's fairly impressive. You can say, whoa, wait a minute. So those would be the five. To me, the five best without a head coach in their ear, I think, is Don Martindale at Baltimore. I think the second is Wade Phillips. I think Jim Schwartz is three. I think Dean Pease is four. And I think Matt Eberflus and Romeo Crennel are tied for five.
Wow, that's nice. Romeo Crennel getting some love. He's in the mix as well.
Yeah, well, here's how I did it too. And let me just get to my sheet here. But here's how I did it. So when you look at this thing, there's about five or six categories that you really need to break down. So if you're looking for defense and you want to study this for betting or anything like that, you want to look at no scoring at the end of the half. You want to look at third downs in the red zone. You want to look at red zone points allowed. You want to look at big plays. You want to look at third and short conversions. Like, for example, last year, the Redskins, they're the worst team in the NFL on defense on third and short. Now, they got this big defensive front. They can't stop a team on third and one. How is that possible? They're the worst team in the league in that, right? Third down overall. Offensive points allowed. That's a key stat. Offensive points allowed. Not just points allowed, offensive points. Because sometimes when we look at the numbers, we see, this team gave up 28 points, but, like the Bears had 36 points with their defense. All right. And then how are they playing 2 minutes? So last year, when you just add up all those numbers, Tennessee, Seattle, Philadelphia, Minnesota, Chicago, Baltimore were the top teams. they were really good. When you add up all those numbers, you weigh them, they come in, and they were really the top teams. And when you look at their ranking, they were really good, and the points they give up. And then New England got better late in the year. New England wasn't – by the midway point, New England was ranked 18th overall. They were 7-3, and they moved up to 12th because they improved in those categories. To me, that is defensive football in today's game. You can't play great defense all the time. You can only play great defense in situations, and those situations matter. Philadelphia, one of the best red zone third down teams. Philadelphia, one of the best teams creating turnovers. Philadelphia, hard to convert third and one on. I mean, when you start adding the situations that why Philly's so good, and people say, well, Schwartz, all he does is play his nine technique. Yeah, it's hard to beat him in that.
Yeah, Schwartz certainly is a great one. You had Wade Phillips, too. Of course, I love Wade Phillips. He's got a great reputation. Who'd you have at number one, best coordinator?
I had Don Martindale from Baltimore. And
That's
I
right.
think Don... And I love Don. And Don, I've been with at Baltimore. I've been with him at Oakland. Wink is a guy the players love. He's an old-time coach in a new era. You know, he's got the way to relate to players. He's smart. He can scheme it. He can match up. You know, and he did it last year with a good defense, and he got them to play at a higher level than they ever played before. He's got the Buddy Ryan kind of, I'm going to take chances. I think the best defensive coaches today are aggressive on first down, but the great ones are really aggressive on second down. They want to put the pressure on the quarterback on second down, because remember, the teams that are great converting first downs and second down, what I call CFL offense, those are the teams that do really well. Those are the teams that take the jump. So I think Martindale has done a good job of molding his talent and getting the best out of players. That's why I really like him. I think Wade's good when Wade can rush five and play man-to-man.
Yeah, that also gets interesting, too, is like certain defensive coordinators are great when it's their system, when they have the right personnel. Other great defensive coordinators can adjust their system for the personnel. Like, I think of the Eagles, I used to love Jim Johnson, that great defensive coordinator, but he needed to have the guys that fit his system, which was, you know, blitz-happy, exotic blitzes, put pressure, et cetera. If those guys weren't the right personnel, it wasn't going to fit. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no doubt. And Jim Johnson, really, what people don't understand is Jim Johnson, Jeremiah Trotter played great for him, but Jeremiah Trotter was like a nose tackle. He stood him up, but he played him like a nose tackle because he blitzed him through the A-gap. So when Trotter went to Washington, another classic Washington move, we're going to sign Trotter, but we don't understand why he plays well. You know, they sign him, but then they don't bring the scheme with them, and then they're like, Trotter sucks, right? Well, you didn't understand the scheme. It's the same thing with Jabril Peppers. I mean, if you trade for Jabril Peppers like the Giants did, you better make sure you understand what he can do. That's where defensive players go. And I think that Jim Johnson has really been, you know, what he does and how he did things was really innovative. And Sean McDermott learned from him. And that's a little bit of what McDermott does.
But to say, McDermott definitely did learn from him with Philadelphia. One other name, you mentioned Flores as well with Miami. I don't think he gets enough pub for what he can do.
I think Brian's really good. I think Patrick Graham, their defensive coordinator, those two were together in New England. They have the New England background. Graham's first chance to be a coordinator. Here's a guy who was at Yale, really smart guy, understands the Belichick system. He went to the Giants. He learned with Spagnuolo. Then he went to Green Bay last year with Mike Pettine. So he brings that with him along with Brian Flores and their defensive staff, Josh Boyer. I think they'll be much better. They'll be smart on defense. They'll play the Belichickian style. They'll play these situations that I talked about. This is the essence of playing good defense in the NFL. If you play these good situations, you'll be a good defense. Forget all the other stuff.
Yeah, well, certainly is interesting. People like to focus on offense in the game today, but honestly, defense is at such a premium because since offenses have so many advantages, as you mentioned, with the rule changes and such, a great defensive coordinator, a great defensive mind, it's worth their weight in gold. Everyone's always searching for the next Sean McVay. You should search for the opposite of that. Where's the great Sean McVay defensively to corroborate and stop those other guys?
Yeah, well, think about it. We don't give enough credit for the play call on defense. We don't give enough credit for that. I mean, when you really sit down and think about it, I mean, when Brian Flores blitzed on that second down and created that interception, that is one of the that is no different than calling a touchdown pass. But we don't ever think about it that way, right? That was a great play call at the right time, and it worked. It was a touchdown. It didn't come out as a touchdown, but it was a touchdown. We give too much to the offensive coordinators with his play calling, when in reality, the defensive play call is so important. And, you know, these guys are able to make the right call at the right time and keep the offense off balance in a game where the rules all favor the offense. I think it's pretty impressive.
Last thought as we close up shop. Did you watch Wimbledon? Longest match ever, Federer Djokovic. Roger's almost 38 years old. And I know he lost. He had two championship points, but I think he's the winner. Mike, he's almost 38. He almost won another Wimbledon. The guy's got 20 majors. It was unbelievable.
It's unbelievable. I did not. My youngest grandson, Mikey, we call him Mikey, Michael Joseph got christened that day. So
oh,
I was
congrats.
Celebrating with him in honor of him. I was in charge of watching Dominic. My other grandson, Leo, he had to go away, but he went back down to Florida. But so I was on I was on grandpa duty that day, or he calls me Peaky. So I was on Peaky duty that day and I missed it, but I read all your tweets. And what I found fascinating is that it always reminds me of that Parcells, that last, who has the last ounce of energy to keep fighting through it? Like, just when you think you're going to quit. I love it. I thought I was following your tweets. It was great. And I read, you know, all the tweets online about people just saying how remarkable it was. I wish I would have watched it.
No, it was certainly great. But you're right. Grandpa duties and the christening, far more important. Congrats. Tell us your duties in Vegas. Where can we find them? Where can we see them?
All right, to Vegas. I'm here with Vegas Stats and Information Network. We're on NESN in the morning, Sirius 204, VSiN TV. I'm filling in for Mitch and Pauly. Great show. If you ever have a chance, Mitch and Pauly's show is really good, entertaining. Mm-hmm. And so they're on vacation this week. So I've got the 4 to 7 shift. I'm the only guy in Vegas going to bed at 7 o'clock because I'm staying on New York time. I'm not changing time zones because I got to get, you know, because for me, the show starts at 7 to 10. So It's been good. It's fun. It's a great show. So there I could do that. And then I'll be back Friday and we'll get another one going next week.
I love that you're doing your best to promote the brand. I promoted the GM Shuffle on Pardon My Take. I was on with the Barstool guys. That's going to get released this week. Those guys like to bust your chops, but I hung in there as best as I could. And I said, do you guys know Lombardi? They said, yeah, of course. We've had him on before. So listen, we've both done a little Barstool sports in our day, but it was...
Yeah, those guys are great. I mean, they have that old, you know, they kind of like, there's an agent, Jimmy Sexton, who's a really close friend of mine, and, mm-hmm. and Jimmy's a Southern guy, and he plays that all shucks, you know, he's not real, but he's really smart. Those guys kind of pretend like, but they get in, they know what they're talking about, you know,
exactly.
And they kind of pretend that all shucks, and then they lure you into a trap, but they're really good, and they're funny as hell. I mean, you know, Big Cat on Twitter is funnier than shit, to listen to him. When I did it, he was in love with Blake Bortles. Of course, he's in love with Mitchell Trubisky.
Big Bears guy.
I can't wait to hear what he's got to say about Mitchell Trubisky's Madden rating. I can't wait to hear that. You know, he's a true Bears fan all the way through the end. It's so good.
Big time. So look forward to Pardon My Take, and hopefully me and Mike go on there together at some point. GM Shuffle is always subscribe, rate, review. Enjoy Vegas. I'll see you next week, man.
Have a great week.